everybody, to Stethoscope, a podcast from the Northern Colorado Medical Society, bringing new scope on your community of physicians, healthcare topics, NCMS leadership, and more. You know me, my name is Paige, and I'm the executive director of NCMS and the lucky host of Stethoscope. The mission of NCMS is to advocate on behalf of our physician members to encourage a strong and healthy medical profession. A part of encouraging that strong and healthy medical profession is providing outlets for our physician members to get to know their colleagues and allow them to think outside the realm of the exam room. I'm so thrilled to introduce today's guest, our very own board member and newly president-elect, Dr. Mark Wallace. Dr. Wallace is a family medicine specialist in Greeley and has over 37 years of experience in the medical field. He graduated from the USC Keck School of Medicine, and he was the director of the Department of Public Health and Environment of Weld County and retired in the summer of 2020. He has been a member of NCMS for over 20 years and has served on the board of NCMS for over 8 years. Dr. Wallace, welcome. I feel so honored to have you here with us.
Well, hello, Paige. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I don't know if you've listened in on these podcasts yet, but I typically start out by asking how you found your passion for medicine, but I'm not going to do that with you today. Instead, I'm going to ask, what's one thing that people don't know about you that they should know?
You know, that is an interesting question. Every once in a while, people ask that in an icebreaker when you're trying to be in a group. And I will share something that it's going to have people go, what are you kidding me? But it was when I was in those adolescent years, you know, and we all kind of, our brains aren't quite fully developed. So we take risks that we probably shouldn't do. But what I was really good at was picking locks.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, yeah, I could pick locks really well. And I must have had some hidden sort of architect or explorer blood in me, because I would like to pick locks on buildings and go in and explore them after hours and kind of, you know, roam around, never to do any damage, never to steal anything, but to just sort of be in there kind of in the dark, exploring the way the building was laid out and all of that. So every once in a while, I would pick a lock and get into a facility and look around. I hope the statute of limitations is all up because I didn't do any damage. I left it the way I found it, but I was pretty good as a very, very silly teen, picking locks. So people don't know that I was a lock picker.
Well, I know who I'm going to call the next time I get locked out of my car. I don't know if that's going to work, but that's awesome. And that's just a great intro to leading into what we're here to talk to you about today, which is getting an award from the New York Times. So I'm wondering if they knew this about you before the award was given. But before we get all the way there, I wanted to take a step back for just a moment. And as we mentioned in your bio, you've been a part of the public health world for quite some time. So tell us a bit about that experience. Did you expect to end up there when you were in medical school?
No, you know, it's interesting. When I first got interested in going into medicine, I was a really young kid. I was a very active kid. And so I ended up at the doctor's office a lot, from jumping out of trees and, you know, getting cuts that had to be sewn up. So my poor mom would take me to the doctor's office a lot. And I got really interested in being a primary care clinician. And when I was in residency, I began to realize that, you know, I think we have a really good training coming into medicine, and my residency was really good. But what I didn't feel very comfortable with was understanding sort of population level health, looking at health from a perspective outside of healthcare, and really looking at those things that were going to contribute to health potentially even more than what healthcare services were going to do. So it wasn't until I got into near the end of my residency program in family medicine that I said, you know what, I don't think I'm as prepared as I want to be to do all of the kind of work that I want to do. So decided to go and get my master's in public health.
Wow, that's a huge step. And I know, I'm sure it's been a transition since you retired this past summer from the Weld County Public Health Department. And now that you've moved on to the North Colorado Health Alliance, tell us a little bit about this work and, you know, how that's been as a career move for you.
Yeah, you know, what's really exciting, I enjoyed walking on both sides on public health and in health services, you know, so delivering healthcare to individuals, looking at prevention inside primary care. That's one of our areas that we try and emphasize. But then looking at it from a global perspective, I really enjoyed that work. I thought I had the perfect a type of balance between the two. And then what I also realized is that another part of what I'm really interested in is how do you kind of structure this environment around us so that you can actually achieve these goals that are either individual healthcare goals or they're goals for a community or for a state or for a population. And so we had a really forward-thinking group of leaders who were from different organizations that, to me, contribute to really that broad view of health. So people from behavioral health, people from safety net primary care, and people from public health. And what we said is we've got to start doing things differently. We've got to start putting all this back together. We have to kind of recognize health as a single complex phenomenon that you really can't pull off these pieces very easily. There's healthcare, so we've got to deal with what kind of illnesses or conditions do we have and how do we take care of them? But how do we prevent them? We prevent a lot of them by behaviors that we choose. What about the environment that's around? What about putting our mind and our body back together again? I don't walk into any office and leave my mind someplace else. I come in, maybe I've got an earache, but I may also have a lot of stress. Maybe there's some depression going on. So we really wanted to create an alliance that would focus on kind of structurally bringing people together and communities together where you could set these broad strategic plans and move toward what I refer to as generating health. Rather than treating disease, let's generate health. Let's have that be our primary goal. And so the alliance is the structure that did that. It's an organization of other partner organizations. And it is focused on generating health in our community in a variety of ways. So it's fun to do. It allows me to still use my clinical skills, to use my population health skills, to learn from behavioral health partners, from school districts, from public health departments, from environmental health people, from folks who focus on behaviors, from folks who fund communities to do work. And so it is a really fun collaborative to be involved in. And it's actually been around now for 20 years, the Alliance.
Wow. And, you know, I love those two words together, generating health, because you don't think about that. Sometimes you just think it's there. It's not something that you have to generate or work at. And it is, especially when we think about mental health and physical health and all of those different aspects. So, I mean, I don't know if you can give me an example since you've started there, like what's one way that you think you've generated health for somebody?
Yeah, you know, that is something that I'm glad it kind of resonates a bit, because we can get ourselves caught up in all the busyness of the work that we do and not really think, well, what are we here for? And if we are here to create what we want, which are thriving families and communities, you have to generate health in order to have people thrive, because without health, it's really hard to thrive. You may survive, but you're not going to thrive. And so examples of where we look at generating health is when we can go in as a community and collectively say, if we want to prevent diabetes, how do we back that up a little bit? Okay, well, let's look at how you develop diabetes. All right, then let's look at how young we can get to have behaviors and access to food, healthy food and all of that. That's going to give a chance for my behaviors to actually work to prevent me from getting my diabetes. And so and some examples of places where we believe we're generating health is we do a lot of work with schools. We do a lot of work with rural schools. Mm-hmm. And we know that what we want are kids to be physically active and have healthy options for food. So we've done things where we have brought in multi-generational playgrounds. We go out on behalf of the school district and we raise money. And then we have that money geared toward a multi-generational playground that gets put at the school with the agreement that the community can use it, that parents and grandparents can use it, so that we begin to get kids interested together with their families to be physically active. Even if that's just for short periods of time, we know that's really good. We've sponsored walking and running clubs so that kids move. And then we tie that in with helping schools be able to build healthy nutrition programs. And so we've worked with schools that have been able to turn that into going back to scratch cooking, you know, to say, let's not just serve prepackaged food. Let's get all these healthy vegetables and let's put them together and let's cook from scratch so that we can make it healthier. And to me, that's contributing way, way upstream to generating health rather than waiting for diabetes to appear. And then being so far downstream that all we can do is throw a lot of money at somebody who has already developed diabetes and maybe in a position where they're suffering some of the consequences, you know, with kidney failure and amputations and all sorts of things. So that's an example in our mind of generating health. We go upstream and we create things that make the right behavior choice the easy choice. And then we help reinforce it by doing it in community so that it's family and multi-generational and connected to schools that kids and their parents trust.
I mean, that I think that's amazing. And some, you know, I wouldn't think that something like cooking from scratch is going to have all these foundational building blocks to then generate health. And you just have to take a step back and realize that that's what it does. So thank you for sharing that. Well, now I know that we'll move into what everyone's excited to hear about, these Fauci Awards. So if I'm understanding it all correctly, these awards were created as an opinion piece by the New York Times to honor the work public health officials like you and then shed light on the positive rather than the negative that some of you have all faced. And so tell us a little bit about this. Were you aware before it was published, or was it just kind of like it was published and you're like, oh, I got an award?
Yeah, I was not aware in advance. And I don't know whether that's because I was so busy that maybe they tried to contact me and tell me that these awards were coming. They are definitely an opinion piece. So I think that's important, but it's still very meaningful. What I really appreciate about it, it's meaningful to me in a couple of ways, because the whole categories that were put together were to recognize just what a challenge it has been to combat this pandemic. And that it took us all coming at it from different ways. And it also paid tribute to where public health particularly struggled and had challenges. Many of the leadership positions in public health have been vacant now. People have left them either for retirement or because they've been terminated, or they left because they just couldn't take the pressure anymore. And all of this collective wisdom that is in public health and is so needed in a pandemic was getting tested. And so the fact that it recognizes public health, which is typically the quiet in the background kind of an organization, you know, we're not the ones that you'll see on the morning news show, you know, where it may be a doctor who is a neurosurgeon, you know, talking about health. We're often the ones quietly working in the background. And it was really nice to see a publication like the New York Times want to really pay tribute, and particularly for what they recognized me for. And that was for working very hard to protect workers' rights to be free of infection. And that meant a lot to me because I did spend a considerable amount of time concerned that essential workforce, while they are very vital to our country, and we clearly needed to have many of them continue to work. That didn't mean that we should not be paying attention to safety of that workforce, and how are we going to protect them? And so I was really honored that they recognized me for focusing on our workforce.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great segue, because I have on here to talk about that specifically. And it was, I believe, JBS, correct? That was the big one?
Yeah, JBS was the one that the New York Times and other national publications were aware of. It was in the news quite a bit and was clearly within the jurisdiction where my agency would need to respond. And so, yes, it was about the work with JBS.
Yeah. And so have you kind of dived into this, but can you tell me a little bit more about the passion for protecting these people and these workers?
Well, you know, for me, what I always think is fascinating about it, whether I'm in an exam room and trying to be certain that I'm considering patients' belief systems or their knowledge or their families' cultural considerations in making health decisions, or you're working with, let's say, a workforce and a business, there's a lot of complex, you know, things that are mixed in. Obviously, we needed certain businesses to continue to operate. And this was a large employer in an essential industry for which Colorado wanted to be certain it didn't get shut down, because it's a meatpacking plant. And you know, that kind of production in Colorado is something that go back generations, and people were concerned. And what I wanted to try and do, and this is sometimes where it got very stressful, is there were times in which people viewed me as wanting to shut the plant down, when in fact what I was working tirelessly to do was to protect the workers and keep the plant open so that it could still continue to meet the demand for food and for meat. And, you know, we don't need to get into the debate about whether or not, you know, people should eat more meat or less meat, but
right.
in it. But what was hard for me was I was working to do and try and balance all those things we balance in an exam room. So there were business interests. I'm not the one that's charged with being certain that the business is successful, but I recognize that the business needed to continue to produce. There was illness that was overwhelming our community. Our hospital was full. I would talk to the doctors at the hospitals every morning and hear about the number of individuals, especially young workers, getting hospitalized and put in the intensive care unit and put on ventilators. And so there was a clear concern for the individual workers, but also to find ways that public health might be able to bring in some tips. How do you take an industry that is not ours to fully understand, but can we bring in the knowledge that we have about worker safety, you know, putting up partitions, maybe doing a little bit of retiming of your production line, how employees arrive, what other things you could do. So I found it to be very similar to what we do in an exam room, only it was on a monster scale. You know, a lot of employees, a huge international company, a lot of different people wanting to weigh in, from hospitals to public officials who were elected officials. So it was complex.
Yeah. And, you know, going off of those lines and lots of people wanting to weigh in, and some just thinking about the economic sides and some thinking about the health sides, you know, if you're comfortable, I'm sure it'd be interesting for myself and our physicians to kind of hear, you know, how was it to cope with some pretty negative words that were thrown, you know, at you specifically in your work? It wasn't just about what all public health officials were trying to do, but you specifically, what was that like?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Over my career in public health, I've been called everything from a tobacco Nazi, you know, that I was somehow trying to prevent people from smoking in their private homes, everything to now with the sort of tension in the country. I've been called a mask hole. It's a way to get through social media by putting mask in front of people. And it sounds like another word that usually isn't allowed on social media. And so, you know, there were those pieces in the background, but parts of it that got the hardest for me, and it I think is unique to folks who come into this from medicine. I took an oath, you know, that I would have to put the person first, and that I would have to bring to it science and evidence. And so when you have taken an oath and you're licensed to practice in a way that is to honor that oath, and then you're in an environment in which so many people want to weigh in and want to potentially say, well, we appreciate your opinion, but we don't think that's the right way to go. And I'm like, okay, well, it's hard when you hear that your professional opinion is only considered an opinion and you're just supposed to operate within this, just accept it if we don't go that way, and have to then address the consequences. So here you have workers who are concerned because they're losing their livelihood because they're getting sick. Mm-hmm. There were workers who died. The hospital's overloaded. There are people concerned about, you know, is it appropriate that we don't step in and expect more to protect this workforce? And you're supposed to bring science and medicine and public health expertise into it. There were days in which it was really, really difficult to try and go from a phone call with an executive inside an organization who didn't agree with where you were going, to elected officials who were balancing interests that were beyond just what public health was needing to recommend. And that got harder and harder as it went on. You know, after a while, you begin to think, can I really do the job that I want to be doing, that I want to use my full breadth of knowledge and experience and commitment to bring science, to bring the best public health practices, to respond in a way that I believe is necessary to control the pandemic and to ultimately get us to the place where businesses would be successful again. And it was hard when people start saying, you don't care, you just want to shut the place down, you want people to lose their jobs, you want to come in and use the strong arm of government. And I was like, gosh, that's not really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to educate and to engage and to reach out and to look at ways in which we can reach our shared goals, you know, safe workplace, people being employed, a company that continue to be successful, a hospital that's not overloaded, a pandemic that's being controlled, all of that. And then in the midst of it, we were facing all sorts of shortages. We didn't have enough masks. We didn't have enough test kits. We didn't have enough swabs to, you know, swab people's noses to find out who was sick. And all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't just toilet paper that was in short supply. It was a lot of the things that we needed in order to bring in and help our communities do the right thing to control the spread of this virus. So after a while, you get worn down when you're working 20 hours a day. And a lot of it is filled with that tension. I mean, it has a very different feel. One of the things I was always really happy about, and I still did it while I was in public health, one of the reasons to continue to see patients one-on-one, there is something exceedingly unique to walk into an exam room with an individual or an individual and their family and be able to work in that environment. And that was my sanctuary. I would find my clinic days when I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go back to my first training, my first love, and the trusting relationships that I have with my patients, and get in that room and close the door and let the world outside go away for a little bit and have me just focus on the person that I'm serving one-on-one here in the room and helping them achieve the health that they want. So that was my sort of, that was my little energizer juicing up, was to go into clinic. And then I'd come back out and obviously be back in the world of having to deal with the bigger community-based issues. So after a bit, I made the decision that it was time. I was at a place in my life where I could step back. I find it an honor to be a physician. I've never felt anything different. It gets me a little emotional when I think about it. I think it is such a privilege to be a physician, that I was at a place where I could make some choices. You know, I could say, I want to go and do things now that I can get that feeling every day in every way I can. And so I retired.
Gosh, Dr. Wallace, I have so many things that I want to say to you. One, you're incredible. The fact that you can say the sanctuary was to go into clinic and treat patients just shows that you were put on this earth to be a physician. So I just feel honored to work with you. And, thanks. You know, regardless of what happened, I think many people will agree that the steps that you took when you were in the public health arena, even before you retired, helped us get to where our community is today in this pandemic, that businesses are still lively, people are healthy, and hospitalizations are going down. So I hope that you realize, like, when you go to sleep at night, that you were a huge part of that, regardless of when you stepped away. And, you know, before we finish up, I would love to hear from your perspective, and I'm sure our physicians would love to know, and our, you know, community healthcare, like, how can we better support public health when we go through things like this? I mean, gosh, I hope that we don't have a new pandemic in 5 years, but, you know, you never know. So how can we all come together as a community, in your opinion, and make sure that we're supporting public health?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that we have to do is to really provide an infrastructure that we can count on. You know, one of the things is public health is very under-resourced for the demands of the world today. There are lots of emerging diseases that public health is going to have to be responsible for. So we've got to get it stable funding. And that probably has to come from public sources. I mean, it's like funding the fire department. You know, there are less and less fires, but we're not closing fire departments. We're finding ways that the fire department brings added value into the community, as fire suppression isn't, as you know, it isn't their main job anymore. Most of their calls are not about fire. But we still fund them. And we've got to do similar to public health. We've got to say, you work in the background to prevent things, but when a pandemic happens, you've got to be able to step up really big time. And we can't sort of build it by backflowing it in. We got to have it ready to go. The second thing is, I think we've really got to find the way that they have a level of independence. If every decision is going to be put into a political context, what we'll end up doing potentially is not having the public health system that needs to be present and to have the actions taken to prevent something. We're lucky that this pandemic didn't kill more people, there are more lethal things out there that if they were able to spread quickly, we would have to do measures that public health would have to be able to implement. And I think, unfortunately, this was the first time I ever remember where an intervention like a mask became so politicized. And that just hurt public health. And we've got to find a way to give some distance and space so that they're not having to have every decision in that context. And we've got to look at it the same way we do in healthcare. We have to have a strong, well-educated workforce. So we've got to attract talent into the field so that they have the kind of excitement that I and my colleagues had in what we were doing. And they hang around for the 20, 30 years to see it as a lifelong profession.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, you're right. You wouldn't think that something like a mask would turn into that, but it did, and it still is. And yeah, we have to find those better supports. Well, I knew beforehand that there was no one more deserving to receive the Fauci Award than you, but now I just, it's just reinvigorated, which I'm sure all of our listeners agree. Are there any final words that you want to leave us with before we let you sign off?
No, I just am really glad to be a physician in Northern Colorado and to be part of the medical society. I think we're at such a wonderful place in our journey as a medical society that the work we've laid out for ourselves, that's been part of reinvigorating me. And so I thank my colleagues. I thank you. I thank the board members for getting us at a state of where we're going to be active and we're going to make a huge difference. And I love that. So I'm excited for our future. And I look forward to working with everybody on the board and with you, Paige. Hope others join our board as we have openings and as they have interests, and that we continue to have members like we have who want their communities to thrive along with their practices.
I couldn't agree more. I am excited to look back in 5 years and just see, you know, where NCMS has gone and what the physicians of our community have done to make it happen. So thank you, Dr. Wallace. It was lovely to talk to you as usual. And thank you all for listening in on Stethoscope, and we will see you soon.